Welcome to Design Oracles. We are here to pontificate, evangelize, and educate you on residential interior design and architecture.
I'm Amity Worrell, interior designer of Amity Worrell & Company.
And I'm Diane Kett, architect of DK Studio, and together partners at Amity Kett.
Katie, your last name is Ronstadt.
No, it's McClure.
That's what I was confused about. I know you as Katie Ronstadt from the Ronstadt Effect, because that is what your professional name is. Sorry about that.
Hey, don't worry. It's pretty common. And I've had people accidentally call me Linda for that same reason. And I'm okay with that.
So funny. So this is Diane. I'm Amity. We are Design Oracles, and we are happy to have you with us today. We may have a little bit of issues, everybody listening, because we're having some microphone issues, but this is just how the world works these days. So we're all probably pretty used to that.
Yes, we're going to roll with it. Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. And it's nice to see you, Diane.
Hi.
And obviously you, Amity, but I see you more frequently.
You do. We saw each other yesterday. So thank you for being willing to be on our podcast. I'm going to ask you some of the questions I have for you. This is always fun for me because it's kind of a moment where I get to ask questions that maybe in regular life I don't have time to talk to folks about. This season, as I was talking to you about before you said you would be willing to be on the podcast, is about how different people in different parts and around the design profession solve problems for clients based on what their background is, what discipline they come to their world from. So why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about yourself, what drew you to the industry, your background, your interests, and how you ended up where you are, and what it is that you do.
Okay. I guess my connection to the industry would be that I buy and sell vintage, mainly furniture, objects to art, interesting pieces that you would put in your home, but some also other things, quirky things, clothes, some still. and I do that here in Austin. I've done it since 2002 in different forms the whole time. Like when I had my kiddos, kind of changed things, but I've been doing it in different ways for 20 years now. And I'm basically a nerd who's really obsessed with cool, unique things. And so that's kind of the driving force, is that I'm always like a dog hunting for a bone, trying to find something that's like exceptional or different or just interesting to me. So I mainly find things and buy them and resell them, keep some, but I also do some kind of like sourcing for people. Sometimes people will be like, oh, I have either a space in my house I want to have something for, or even I've done some like commercials and videos and a little bit of that kind of stuff where I'm like, oh yeah, hit me up, what do you need? And they'll say, this is the kind of vibe I'm creating. And usually I end up saying, well, I don't have exactly what you have in mind, but with the vibe, let me suggest this. And like, I throw a whole lot more at them usually than they even ask for, because I am a nerd, as I said. So that is what I do in the vintage world. I guess what drew me into this, and you were saying next, I guess, background and stuff, I'll get to that. I had a serious, you know, forever geeky obsession with interiors since childhood. Brady Bunch, obviously, like you guys. I mean,
obviously.
And while we didn't get obviously to know the specifics of Mike Brady's architectural firm, like, there were a lot of blueprints, and that was intriguing. And obviously they're home. I live in a house with a floating staircase like theirs, so I feel like I'm kind of a Brady.
You did live in a house with a floating staircase?
I do now.
This is my gosh.
Behind me. This is my mom's house, because okay, it's quieter today. My house is pretty loud and bustling, and there's a lot of barking and stuff, so I didn't want to do this here, or there, excuse me. Anyway, so childhood obsession with interiors, I was always moving my furniture around myself and like found ways for my like second grade body to move like a giant tall piece of furniture in my room because I just was obsessed with it. And then always had a lot of interest in just like historical fiction and like not only following the story, but like every detail behind what was going on in the story, if it was TV. My dad had his office at the Dallas City Hall, which was, it's like an inverted pyramid designed by I.M. Pei. Have you ever seen this building?
I have, yes.
Uh-huh. So cool.
A super amazing building. So I always was like inspired by all of that eye candy. And so I think all those things kind of really influenced me. And then luckily my mom, my family, they really like focused on when we could traveling. And my mom was a teacher and she taught really, she taught people who are immigrants from mainly from Latin American cultures. And so I used to get to go into people's homes and see like homes that were not affluent, but were so beautiful and so layered and so loving and so comfortable. And so I had an early appreciation for like just, design, good design, and it's not about money, it's just about like feelings and connection and
I love that
meaning. So anyway, so that's that. I guess my background is not, I was not like pulled into things like you know, career wise like a tractor beam, like it seems like Diane, you just knew early on, right?
I wasn't, yes.
I was more of an Amity where I was like, life is so interesting in so many ways. And I keep coming back to all these different interests, right? I guess I'm like characterizing some of the things I heard that you-
That's that. Your background, the way you enjoy just seeing how people live at all walks of life, it sounds very familiar to what I learned growing up going to garage sales.
Yeah, oh my goodness. Garage sales for life, for real. Yes, no, exactly. So, career-wise, I guess in college, I studied Spanish and history, double majored at UT in those. So I was a liberal arts girl and just wanted to add more tricks to my bag and things that interest me. And so, but those actually, you know, even within those areas, it's like, again, seeing molas from places in Latin America, like, or even like in Southern Spain, there's so much like Moroccan influence. And I was lucky to get to go on a trip in college to Morocco and Southern Spain. And so like all of those patterns and tiles and all of those things, like were always part of all of my other academic interests, right? So that led to me also, well, so I was also a teacher for 20 years. I still consider myself a teacher. So at the same time, I was working in education sometimes, like that would take the front seat and vintage would take the back seat. And then summertime vintage would take the front seat. And, you know, sometimes it was just kind of like, they were kind of equal. I don't know how I did that, but so my master's is in education with a focus on language and literacy. So not an obvious trajectory, I guess, but I guess that's just my wacky way is like it all.
Well, tell me this. I'm interested in how you, I have so many questions, but I'll try to stay focused. It's not my best skill. Tell me how you ended up doing this full time. Like, and I think, doesn't your husband also do it with you, or that's not the case? Yeah.
My husband helps me for sure. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of, he's amazing and super supportive. And so he's not like me where I could like talk about a chair for an hour or, sure. You know, mm-hmm. or 10 hours. Like he's not that way. Like, God bless him. That's probably a better way to be.
Sure.
Not a formal, but he always has supported my interests and he does so much of the like just logistic stuff, you know, that is uninspiring but necessary for me. And so he's a great help with all of that kind of stuff. So we do work in tandem. But I, like I said, just doing it over for so long, I just kind of have phased out a little bit the education and am just only doing this now.
So tell me, who do you consider your client? Because I think this might be a complicated, I'm setting you up for kind of a complicated answer, I would think, right? Who's your client, Katie? If I said, who do you work for?
Set me up, Annity. Yeah. Amity, ready for all of the setups and pitfalls, and I'll just lay the trap. Now, my clients, I guess the majority would be just people who happen to find things that I have sourced and have put up for sale either on Instagram, on the internet, or in a brick and mortar where I take merchandise here in Austin. I am not the owner of that store, but I do share a space with other vendors who are also obsessed people like me. And I've done this in a couple of stores in Austin over the years. I started out years ago at Room Service, and I learned so much. That's still like a home to me. The owner
of the Vintage store on North Loop or Lamar, I can't remember.
North Loop. And then I moved in the last few years to Revival Vintage, which was across the street from Room Service, and then has moved to North Lamar. So I share space with other vendors there. So sometimes people just come into the brick and mortar and source objects and I don't necessarily even interact with them. But then I also have those quirky people, like I mentioned, that I've kind of like just fortunately kind of developed a network of people that will reach out to me, like I said, and say like, hey, I'm looking for this. And I love that because usually, like I mentioned before, we don't necessarily have like people will, and I feel like this is something maybe you guys relate to, like people have like a very specific vision and it needs to be that one thing. And then I kind of try to find like something that is meeting their needs, and usually it ends up being kind of more of like a serendipitous thing that we don't have what that one thing was in that moment, because we end up finding something better when we think about like, well, what's the whole context that this is going into, and what is like, what attracts you to that one thing? Well, we don't have that one thing now, but let me suggest, you know, this menu of things. And we usually end up finding something so much richer and more interesting that way. So I have kind of a little bank of people that I've worked with in that way. And so, and I don't know where we're going.
They're kind of individual people that just are looking for really great furniture.
Because there's a lot of hobbyists.
Don't have the time to do it, just know they want something. And so they'll contact
you. I mean, I'm an example of that, who is both buying for myself that in my mid-century home. so I'm obsessed with that as well. And then there's also, I'll tell a little story that Katie and I got to work together last week on. And I had a client who had just moved to town and didn't have anywhere to sit, literally in her home at an island countertop needed to be. I had limited time, but Katie and I've worked together. So I trust her eye, and our communication has been good. I found myself drawn to a lot of things at Revival Vintage that Katie had sourced and was purchasing it even before I realized that she had purchased it. I'm getting to where I can walk into that particular place now and see the Katie direction, and I'm able to identify, yes, she might not have purchased this for Amity, for the Amity client, but I can see her eye in those sources. And then there's someone there I know that has a lot of interesting Italian mid-century and kind of a refined sensibility. And anyway, all of that to say that an example of how Katie has helped me and how I am her client is personally buying things that I would put in my home. And then I had a client who needed a counter stool. So I picked up the phone and called Katie and said, Katie, stat, I need counter stools immediately. They have to be counter height, not bar height. And I sort of waxed poetic about what this client's personality was, what their existing pieces are, the style of home that she's living in. And then I sort of said, budget's, you know, a thing always, but I don't know what that number is. Go. Right, Katie?
Yeah. No.
What did you do?
No, I love it because I feel like I said the first time I really talked to Amity, I was like, oh, kindred spirits we are. Like, I love it that you just threw out those little conditions and let me look for furniture, because I love looking for furniture. I love, love, love it. So
sounds like a lot
to have you come to me and ask those things. So thank you for collaborating with me.
And then the end of it is, the next, within 2 to 3 hours, I had 7 options that Katie texted me and said, I found these counter stools, this is where they are, I can get my hands on them, do you want them, is this right? And then the happy ending is, the next day I got Katie delivered the stools, and I got a photo from my client of her her niece sitting at the bar stool eating snacks after school, and a note that says, from the client, that says, I love Katie, because Katie delivered it. And it was amazing.
I am so grateful. It was awesome. And I love the client. I love you. And I love those experiences. So keep them coming, you know.
So this is another thing I think that we have in common, is that people, this sounds bad, but people kind of want to be us in that they want to do interior design. There's a lot of people who want to be interior designers. And that, I would say, wouldn't you find that there's a lot of people who want to be furniture sourcers? And I would call you urban scavengers too. Do you garbage pick, Katie?
Oh, yeah. Oh, everything is a source to me. Like, I'm like, I will go anywhere. I will do anything.
Because you go to some of those, you know, what's that? In Winnie, outside of Beaumont, right? Isn't there a big flea market furniture place? And then there's another one outside of Dallas. I can't remember the name.
And then, like, are you thinking of like Canton and Round Top, or?
No, it wasn't as fancy as that. Well, I don't know. Anyway, you just go around looking for all these cool finds, and that takes a lot of time, right?
Oh yeah, it does. That's, I guess. So I totally get what you were, you know, your segue. Like, I feel like design is so ubiquitous now, right? And then there's been this growing trend of like, well, I want to do that. I'm going to be a designer. That sounds like, it sounds simple. It sounds amazing. I want to do that. I want to be a furniture seller. That sounds amazing. And of course, appreciatively, we want people to be able to do it. There's nothing like that. I'm not implying that we don't, but I just mean, it sounds more glamorous than it really is, I imagine, because it's a lot of like legitimate dirty work. Like, just, so I feel like my thought is, you have to be obsessed to be like sustain in this industry, to me, because the nitty gritty of getting the work done is, it's not even necessarily profitable sometimes. I mean, it's sometimes you have times when I can't speak for you guys, I'm speaking for myself, but I'm like, sometimes it's not that profitable. It's very cyclical. Sometimes it's really, really hard to find good stuff. In fact, it's always really hard. Even like, I think, you know, locally, it's harder than a lot of other places, because one, I mean, sourcing objects in this region of the country, people didn't have basements. That's one thing that always, I think, sets us apart. Like, I see so many people in the Northeast just like pulling this amazing thing up and this amazing thing up. Like, it's just like super effortless. And I know it's not for them. And that's an exaggeration, surely, but it's just not as accessible here, because not a lot of stuff had proper conditions to survive if we didn't have a basement. So like there's that. Then it's like Austin particularly was in the past a pretty small town, and we've had this exponential growth. So there weren't as many people long ago to have kept objects that we would want now. And now there are so many people trying to get them, because vintage has become so much more desirable, and everyone here is sourcing for a new place or a renovation. And anyway, so it's there's a lot. It's not easy to do. So I think that the driving force, if you're gonna stay in it, has to be like it's in your blood and it's truly an obsession that consumes you.
I do think it's very true that you have to feel the passion for it, because it isn't always, like you say, lucrative. It's definitely dirty work. Literally, you're the one who cleaned the stools with soap and water, presumably, before they got delivered, so that they weren't literally filthy. And then, you know, when I bumped into you yesterday, it was 104 degrees and you had just loaded a black leather sofa into the back of a van and were hauling it around on the chance that you might find someone who loved it, who, by the way, I did. I didn't have a place for it, but I did admire it. And that was fun.
Thank you.
It's not for the faint of heart.
No. It's not all glamour, for sure. Seeing sausage being made is not always exciting, but.
And then I love that you're banking on the relationship too, because you and I will continue to work together. Whether or not that stool moment was lucrative for you or not is yet to be seen. But in the end, our relationship will be ideally for both of us that I will be able to source things through you and you will be able to supply for me, and then also buy from me, because we've done that before as well.
Yes. Yeah. Can we share about the amazing table?
Oh, yes, we can. Let's tell another story. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
bought and then sold right back.
Well, there was this table that was sourced by my good friend Brandon at ECD Finch Vintage, and it was amazing. I was in love with it, didn't have a place for it. Amity bought it. I didn't even know her very well. And I just was like looking at the tag, like, who purchased this?
And sometimes I feel like only worthy people need apply to buy the things that I think are fantastic.
Yeah, for sure. So I like approached her like a weirdo, like, I saw you got that table. You're so lucky to have that table. Look at this, like, look at the caning. Look at this. It's amazing. This is very, very lacquered rosewood.
And I said to you, I had found it online. I saw it on Instagram and I drove immediately to Revival and sat outside till they opened and walked in and said, I'm buying that. That's mine. I'm buying that. And then I had no place for it.
You're speaking my language, driving here to get it immediately and waiting for the doors to open. And so I was really grateful when, after a time, you were ready to acknowledge it just needed to go out of storage. So
it deserved a home. It didn't have a good home with me. I was only keeping it from the greater public, and that wasn't fair. So go ahead, Katie. Sorry.
No, please. This is a collaborative experience here. We share this experience together. But I so then I didn't have a place for it in my home either, which was heartbreaking. So I had it for sale. And the funny thing is, the second that it finally sold to a lovely couple, thank God, I didn't know that. I was outside of the store and two other vintage vendors came over to me and they had a look and they were like, you sold that table, Katie. We want you to know. And I think that it was also kind of like they were dropping the bomb of like a large sale. Mm-hmm. But my initial reaction was not like, woo, money or whatever. It was who bought that table? Are they nice people? Do they seem like nice people? Like I instantly-
Do they appreciate that table as much as I do?
Mm-hmm. And she said, did they appreciate that table as much as I did? And that's true. That's what I said to you when you said, I sold that table. Because there's a sadness, there's a heartbreak, there's also a happiness. But then I needed to know where they live so I could drive by and see if they were decent people. I'm just kidding. I didn't do that.
Exactly.
Are they worthy of the table?
Exactly. So I was amused when Amity then texted me and was like, I saw that you sold the table. Did they seem like worthy? And I was like, I have the exact only greatness deserves such a table. So they were lovely people who liked Italian modernism and just really, really nice. And they said, by the way, they said that they would enjoy it very much with their kids and grandkids.
Like, oh, that's awesome.
Okay. Sounds like it went to a real winner.
I was ready to move on at that
point. I guarantee you that was probably not lucrative for me, but was it meaningful? Absolutely, it was meaningful. So
yeah.
So Katie, another question I wanted to ask you, and I feel like I might know the answer to this, but do you have sort of, I guess I would love to hear, do you have, like I said, I can go in and identify something that Katie's purchased and put up for sale, but it's not because it's a specific period necessarily, but do you have a favorite period or a type of furniture you look for, or what is your aesthetic? Tell me how that works for you.
Well, I appreciate, by the way, that you can identify that. That's like such an indication that you have such a good eye, which is, you know, abundantly evident, but I'm like, I appreciate that because, and you know, the space that I sell things in right now is a real hodgepodge of people's stuff all mixed up. So that's interesting to hear that you're able to identify. So, neat. But no, I guess a favorite period. I mean, I feel like it's so obvious to say mid-century right now, but it's been a long-term passion of mine. So that's still the case. But really, I just love like very, I love modernism. I love abstract expressionism. I mean, these are all things that you think of, but like, I love bold and graphic pieces, Marimekko, like Bitossi. These are all things that like just consume me. I love that stuff so much. Real things that are really sculptural. These are not specific time periods. I'm sorry, because I actually don't like things that are too pure. I have an appreciation for that, but I feel like to me, things are so much more interesting when they are layered and not like so singular in vision. Like I just really like a lot of depth. So I don't know. I mean, I love a lot of things. I'm indecisive.
That's a perfect answer because it's one of those things that you don't know it till you see it. But when you see it, you know it.
Yes.
That's kind of the thing. What about the difference between what you do and like a furniture flipper? And I guess I don't mean that.
Furniture flipper.
Yeah. Well, I saw that there's on Instagram some people who buy pieces. I see Katie's getting really worked up over there. I can see. But I want to hear a little bit about what that is. There's a furniture flipping market, Diane, and it's so interesting.
Wait, do they ruin the furniture?
Sometimes they ruin the furniture.
What,
so
like when you say that, that's what I'm thinking. What if they take some amazing finished piece and paint it red?
They do. Oh yes, that's another story. But yes, talk to me about in your industry, Katie, your personal feelings and then the overarching difference between maybe what you do and what these people do. Go.
I love that question. Okay, so I guess I think that, and I'm glad that you asked this because I had to think like, what is the difference? So good reflection. I'm thinking that what sets, you know, and I have an appreciation for what they do too. Don't get me wrong. Like I feel like design is so inclusive and I want everyone to be a winner. You know, like there are so many options out there. And different people want different things. But I think I'm kind of in a little niche where I'm not really just after a buck. And I feel like, and that doesn't mean that sounds horrible. I didn't mean it that way, but I just mean like, I frequently pass on things. Like I mostly pass on things. We're all seeing lots and lots of stuff everywhere, right? And so it's like 99% of it, I pass on. And some of in that 99%, like say it's 20, 40% of that, like I could easily grab it and know I could make profit on it easily and often quickly. But I pass on that because I feel like it's not all about the Benjamins for me. It's just kind of like, it's about the stuff and the people. Like, I feel like really, really exceptional things that fall into that 1% are like what I am most excited about. So that's like what I want other people to be excited about. And I want to find other people that are excited about that and share those things with them. Like, this is such a geeky, weird answer, but I just feel like uniqueness and atypicality has always been a driving thing for me. And so if you're thinking about casting a wide net, like, that is a good way to be able to flip and to make money. And so that's admirable because really we do need money to pay our bills. Let's acknowledge. Mm-hmm. But at this point in life for me, like, I feel like I want to do something that's a little bit more concentrated and super valuable to me and interesting to me. And so I just don't usually do flipping. Like, in some respects I do. If you think about it, I try to do a higher quality version of it, but so if you think of that 1% that I said that I think is like kind of the stuff that has great potential, even within that 1%, there's kind of like a bronze, a silver, and a gold, you know? And so it's like, for me, like, I love to get the gold, but the gold is super rare. That rosewood table with the cane chairs was gold to me. And sometimes you find gold, but you also are lucky to be able to find bronze and silver, because bronze and silver in the right context can look like gold. Like, this is so crazy. Why am I doing so many weird metaphors? I don't know. But I just feel like, so not everything is a Mona Lisa, right? And but things that are not Mona Lisas are still things that have great merit and can be quite beautiful. So it's like, some of the things that I might, you know, classify as being in the bronze category are kind of like a flip. Like, they're beautiful, they're interesting, and these sure. This can make someone very happy. And there's no reason to be pretentious about things, right? Like, sure. Silver is great. Bronze can be great. Like, I have a lot of silver and bronze in my house, and I love it, you know? So, I don't know. That's my really long-winded sort of...
That totally makes sense. And I think if I were doing what you do and what I sort of do anyway, too, is when I'm helping clients find furniture pieces, I have to think about function and cost. So there's the gold, which is maybe the thing I think that they should spend the money on and really relish and have forever and pass on, which is probably an upholstered piece of furniture oftentimes. But then there's the bronze in maybe the side table that just needs to have two tiers and be a place to put your, you know, crap, for lack of a better term, and to hold a lamp and be the right size. And so I think that totally makes sense. I guess this is another thing that may be hard to answer. So if it's not a great question, I think about how you differentiate yourself from this in this marketplace. Like, I know it's collaborative and that you have friends that do this, but how do you differentiate yourself when maybe you're going to a big show and you have to set up your stand? And how do you flag to people, this is where you need to come if this is how you think? Does that make sense? Like,
no, absolutely. Like, it's kind of, I feel like I describe it as like a point of view. Mm-hmm. Like, I think we all just have like an aesthetic point of view, obviously, right? And so it's like, I think we're all kind of seeing the same stuff, culling through it and making choices, right? And so we are kind of like, when I choose to buy something, that means it's either in my kind of like bronze, silver, gold, right? That is, to me, that's expressing my point of view. And I think that, like, again, I was reflecting about this. I think hopefully my point of view and what is evident when I'm purchasing those items and trying to sell those items is that it's something that's like kind of telling a story. Like, it would fit into a space that tells a story, because that's what moves me. That's really something I'm passionate about. Something that is, again, I'm using the word exceptional, atypical, but I hope so. Like, I just don't like something that is, I'm not as inspired by things that are easily attainable, you know? Mm-hmm. And sculptural, and also kind of like with a little bit of a sense of humor. Like, mm-hmm. I don't, like, mm-hmm. I kind of am amused by things sometimes. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like objects kind of tell a story, and sometimes it's a funny one, sometimes it's a little more serious, but again, it's just that evocative feeling. I don't know. Did I answer that?
No, you did. Absolutely. That's great. So another question that's a little more practical is about pricing. How do you price things? I think this is a good question just to make sure that we touch on, at least for people that want to be you when they grow up. And how do you price things?
Well, prayers for anyone like that, if there is someone. That's important. So thoughts on pricing. I think, like, of course, the first thing is what did I pay for it? You know, the effort that goes into making it resellable, which sometimes like I have to either, my husband or I have to like, you know, do kind of minor repairs. I try to go to professionals for more major repairs. I mean, upholstery, a lot of that stuff for the price point that we get in Austin, Texas, like it's not, it's like prohibitively expensive. So, you know, I'm lucky sometimes to be able to work in tandem with a designer like you to be able to say like, oh, well, this is an amazing structure that you can personalize through upholstery and, you know, different stain, whatever it is, to create your visual scheme, right? So that's an amazing thing. But so I guess it's what I paid, it's how much I love it, how unique it is. Mm-hmm. Hopefully anything I purchased would be in that like bronze, silver, gold. I don't know why we're coming back to this. It was just a way to try and make sense of it. Mm-hmm. So then I actually really find so much merit again in having those different levels, because I also really feel like design should be really inclusive. Like people should be able to get beautiful things and have beautiful spaces and have really a lot of character in the items of their home for not necessarily much money, you know? So I try to have a lot of accessible pieces, but again, making ends meet, when you do have a gold, you factor that exceptionality into the price. So
it sounds like it's more of a, it's some science and some art and some emotion sprinkled in.
It is. And, you know, I really, again, love these collaborative networks because, you know, working with other dealers and designers, like it's great. Like we always are like, what price should this be? This is what I, like, we're all talking about it. And so it's just really neat how often a lot of us that I work with will have like, we'll all like write it like a game show, like mm-hmm. I'll be like, oh, okay, that looks like, and I'll write down like $475 or something. And then my friend will say what it is and I'll be like, bingo. And it's like the same number or whatever. Like, so it's kind of weird how like there is kind of, even though it's kind of a crapshoot for lack of a better word, like it's, or is that the right word? I don't know. I'm not a gambler. Not in that respect at least.
Yeah.
But so even though it is kind of seemingly arbitrary, there's like something to it. Like we kind of follow each other and there is kind of like some acceptable kind of layer of pricing that like we kind of all internalize with like current conditions, economy, the market we're in, the town we're in. So I don't know.
No, that makes sense. When I worked at an auction house, a lot of the pricing we did when we were pricing things for auctions was related to, I don't know what it would go for. What did the last one go for? You know, there was like, let's look back at another thing that's similar and what did that go for in the marketplace, et cetera. So, well, Katie, this is also,
well, I have one more question.
Oh, sure. Go ahead. I was also going to make sure that Katie gets to tell us anything she wants to tell us.
I was just curious, do you think you'd ever want to have your own storefront, like have your own shop?
No, I'm glad you're saying that. Yeah, I actually do. I feel like,
awesome.
Yeah, cool. I was actually on the verge of that shortly before March 2020. And right. We actually had already signed a lease. We had a great owner of a space that was just a lovely person. It felt like it was, you know, that your kind of your heart intuition felt like it was a really good match. And then dun, 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 things changed. And they were also a lovely enough person to understand like, oh no, it's no big deal. We understand why you wouldn't want to start a brick and mortar at a location in March, 2020, when all of us felt like, oh
yeah,
sky was falling.
Maybe not.
Yeah. And then, so, I've been really, really grateful to be able to collaborate and be at Revival. But I do think, you know, eventually, I guess there's the next step of me curating my own shop and curating my own vendors. And it's just a question of when, but it will happen.
So Katie, when you're ready, call me first. I am so in. I want to invest. Let's do this together. You think I'm kidding? I am so not kidding. Let's do it.
I'm also seeing almost like a little, like you have a table in the back to design and scheme things.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm already visualizing it for you. Diane, Amity's office that she loves to go to.
That's right. That's where I hide. Diane can help us manifest it. She's very good at manifesting.
I am incredibly grateful to hear these tidbits of support and ideas. So,
yeah.
Muchísimas gracias, as we would say in Spanish. I'm so thankful. Oh my goodness.
Well, Katie, thank you so much for being willing to do this.
Yeah, this was fun. We really
appreciate it. And I'm sure that in just a few minutes here, I'm going to think of some other things I need you to help me find, and I will send them to you.
Thank you both so much. It was truly an honor.
Thank you for listening to Design Oracles with Amity Worrell, owner of Amity Worrell & Company, and Diane Kett, owner of DK Studio, and together, partners at Amity Kett.